You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Sharad Kutin, and on The Breakfast Grill this morning, we celebrate World Press Freedom Day. Proclaimed in 1993 by UNESCO, we are called to celebrate the fundamental principles of press freedom, to evaluate press freedom around the world, to defend the media from attacks on their independence, and pay tribute to journalists who have lost their lives in the exercise of their profession. Of course, we're all aware that the media does not operate in a political vacuum, and to help us understand this better is the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Dato' Noor Jazlan Mohamed. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Hi, Sharad. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and you were a regular feature on BFM, especially when you were heading the Public Accounts Committee of Parliament. I want to begin with the fact that Malaysia and other countries get rated on the question of press freedom. Where, in your mind, using whatever standards that you have, where would you put Malaysia's press freedom in terms of the region or in terms of where we are today as against the past?
Well, the Reporters Without Borders put us at number 144 out of a possible 170 rating of countries in the world, which I think is unfair. And also, I think the methodology that they've been using is outdated in the current online world of press freedom.
What do you think they're missing out on?
Well, they're focusing on print media. They're focusing on the freedom that companies or media owners have on printing newspapers, magazines, and distributing it. Also, the background against whether there are enough legislation, for example, like sedition law, libel law, obscenity laws, to regulate them. So it's always a fight between what they can do and what the government will do to regulate them. Unfortunately, you have the new media today, which is Facebook, which is transmitting what they are doing without any government regulating them.
And so do you think Malaysia has a good record in terms of being fairly open regime when it comes to online media?
I think so, because we do have the checks and balances in the system when it comes to print media. The problem that we have today is about what do we do against the global influences of the new media, false news, fake news, etc. So how do we deal with that? So I think the Reporters Without Borders should focus on the new media instead of focusing on the old media.
The world media, I think, remains an important part of the media landscape today. And I want to just point out the fact to our listeners that your father, Mohamed Rahmat, was our former information minister.
Yes.
In fact, he served under two prime ministers, Tun Hussein On and Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. And in total, I think he served more than 10 years as information minister.
He served for 16, but over a span of 20 years. So at that time, the print media was the only game in town. It's not today.
And what was the logic of the government's approach to media those days?
The direct control on the owners of media through the printing press. So my father had a tough time trying to deal with these influences because, the concentration of power that were on the media owners at that time. But they were still within reach, within contact, within reason to regulate them. Today, the difference is, the media owners are outside of the country. So we can't really exert our influence on them in a regulatory sense. So that's the difference.
In fact, in 2009, at the launch of the new economic model, the Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Tun Razak, said the era where government imposed excessive controls and adopted the attitude of government knows best is over. Do you think his administration has kept to its vision?
See, the point about the whole thing is, if you look at the Reporters Without Borders, how they form the index, they're talking about reporters being restricted access. In Malaysia, the reporters, whether print media or online, are not restricted to people. You are interviewing me here today, directly as a member of government. You're talking about how many reporters get hurt or killed, how many reporters get sued in law, through legal means. In Malaysia, the numbers are very low. So that itself tells you that in Malaysia, there is a very high level of press freedom.
But do you think that critics, why do you think that critics continue to berate the Barisan National Government for its lack of media freedom?
I think for political purpose, right? The media is supposed to influence people. The definition of press freedom is, you know, the ability to print and disseminate information, you know, through the print media, with subject to the laws of the country concerning libel, obscenity, and sedition. So, how much freedom do they want? Is freedom does freedom also mean that you can, defame somebody? You know, does freedom also mean that you can? You don't have the responsibility of on what you write. That means before, when you had the print media, because of the license, the reporters, the printers, had the ethical standards that they applied throughout their business. Today, you know, somebody can tweet or make a Facebook comment through anonymous cloak, and yet they feel safe because, you know, the government cannot, or even the normal citizens cannot take action against them for what they say.
I think what a lot of critics talk about is the lack of a level playing field. You're saying that globalization of the media, the fact that you have all the online platforms, has in some ways leveled the playing field. But if you look at Malaysia, internet penetration rates are very high in cities, not particularly high in the rural sector. And we know, and we're actually entering into a season of the general elections with G14, you can even smell it, it's coming around the corner, people will be saying that the game is being played largely in the rural areas of this country, and that's where there isn't a level playing field. Politically connected television still favours the Barisan National.
Well, 30 years ago, Malaysia was still largely rural. Today, name me which part of Malaysia, especially Peninsular Malaysia, that is still rural, because most of it is urbanised. And with the internet penetration, it has enabled people to have access to the news that they want. I would just like to put some rationalization into the print media influence today. If you look at the print media influence today, you know, Straits Times, I was told the circulation today is 40,000 copies a day, which is actually very low. Very low. I mean, you know, whatever you say only reaches 40,000 people every day. You look at BFM today. You know, your really, I think your listenership is increasing, but it's at a slower rate. And then today you are filming me while I'm doing a radio interview, you know, for your online content. So, how much influence do you wield on people today? It's I think less and less. But the individuals that post or make news on their own, these are the people that we are looking at regulating at the moment, because because we want to remove that cloak of anonymity, and then make them responsible for what they write.
Now, speaking to that precise point, in 2011, there was talk that the Printing Presses and Publications Act 1984 would be amended to expand its scope to include online media. It was mooted, and then it was pulled back. Do you foresee a revival of this plan anytime soon?
No, we have a distinct separation of responsibility here. I mean, print media is still in the whole ministry for a lot of reasons which are also historical. But the online media is being regulated by the Ministry of Communications. So I think that particular structure is still relevant today.
But what about the question of draconian laws? I mean, this is always brought up by critics, that they have a chilling effect on the media, that if you were to seek to regulate online content, whichever ministry it comes from, you still have a dampening effect. It would undercut the guarantees in the Multimedia Super Corridor Charter, all those things. I mean, is that something that the government today will be willing to move against? I mean, these guarantees.
Sharad, it's always a fight between total freedom and also regulated freedom. It's a fight between integrity. It's a fight between ethics. It's a fight between responsibility. Now, if the government was truly draconian, it would close down BFM.
Do you think so?
Yes, because BFM has been very vocal, you know, in its content against the government. But we want that press freedom so that, you know, people have a balanced view. Malaysia Kini, very biased media, they've been around for 18 years, and the government has allowed them to operate. But they have to realize that, you know, they now suffer from news fatigue. People tuning into Malaysia Kini and its news, it's less and less every day because, you know, people are looking at alternative media.
What about, and come back to the question of fake news, I believe that BFM has always strived to be balanced in its in its view of things.
Not to some people. Not to some people.
Yeah, yes. There are partisans on both sides, yes. I guess. But I want to come to this question of fake news because I think the Prime Minister himself has also mentioned the problem of fake news. And I believe the MCMC, the Malaysian Communications Multimedia Commission, has launched a fact-checking portal, sebenarnya.my. Do you think these efforts are really going to work? I mean, are people going to go and check facts?
How are you going to check facts in the fast-moving world of news today? You know, anything that's being said is already broadcast less than a minute later. So it's a bit difficult it's very difficult to regulate that.
So do you think it's a losing game?
But unfortunately, what is going to be said will be said, and it won't be fact-checked. So how do you regulate that kind of situation? That's the issue we have here today. For example, I give you there was a poison pen letter or, you know, some fake news letter floating around about my boss, the Deputy Prime Minister, being appointed as Prime Minister, and then with this shadow cabinet that was floating around a few months ago. Now, until today, we tried to get Facebook to basically reveal who is the person behind the Facebook account that was responsible for originating the letter. And Facebook refuses to cooperate. And why should they? Because they say, it's press freedom. It's individual freedom.
But you've had big boys, big players in this game also conceding to controls in, say, China. China has been able to kind of negotiate its own terms, even against some basic principles of freedom of information. Does Malaysia look to China as a model of how it might negotiate with the big boys?
No, we can't because we're small. So we have to adopt the strategy of being a small country, but having a heavier weight in world affairs. Now, I'd like to return to the RS, Reporters Without Borders again. China is number 151 in the list. We are number 144. So totalitarian regime, 151, the rating, and we are 144. Now, that itself shows that the that the index is flawed. In many ways, number 143 is Gambia. Their president, had to flee the country, and then the new president had to be brought in, you know, by the African Union to assume power. Now, do you say that press freedom in Gambia is better than Malaysia? No, because the country is politically and economically in a mess. We are not.
I'm speaking to Dato' Noor Jazlan Mohamad, the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. Today is World Press Freedom Day, and next we look at tricky questions about press freedom in the age of terrorism. I'm Sharad Kutin, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you just joined us. It's World Press Freedom Day, and we're speaking to Dato' Noor Jazlan Mohamad, the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. We said we want to talk about terrorism. I just want to go to a quote that you made just before we get to the question of terrorism, because I think it's important. I have you here quoted saying, "We do not take the attitude," and you're speaking to journalists, "of speaking first and hurting the religious feelings of the people and apologizing later." Now, it does seem, Dato', that at times there are people, individuals, sometimes politicians, sometimes others, or social groups that have a tendency to take offense when no offense was intended, or journalists were just doing their jobs in describing what was going on. And take, for instance, the example of Time magazine when it featured that Myanmar monk Wiratu, who dubbed him the face of Buddhist terror. There were demonstrations against Time magazine, demonstrations against the press at that point in time. What's your sense of this kind of problem, the problem of people taking offense too easily or for political purposes?
Well, under the Reporters Without Borders rating, Myanmar rates higher than us. Okay, so, see, this is the job of government to regulate the media because, you know, whatever is being said in the media can actually have consequences politically, socially and economically. Now, sensationalism has always been part of the media strategy to gain readership, to gain viewership. Now, the question is, how do you make them responsible? You know, I think what you're referring to, the Nanyang Siang Pao caricature issue that happened a few weeks ago, where I made that statement. I said, you know, think before you do something. So media has got a responsibility to think before they do something.
But are we become too thin-skinned? I mean, are especially politicians who are in public office, who get their votes, should be subject to a high or a different standard? This is not libel. This is questioning and just criticality. Do you think they should actually hold back from attacking the press when they are criticised?
I think politicians shouldn't be blamed. Haji Hadi accepted Nanyang's apology the next day. So he wasn't really bothered by it, but he was the subject of the caricature. Now, what has happened is his supporters, some Muslim groups who feel offended, because when it comes to religion, Islam is still the dominant religion in Malaysia. So whatever is being said in a non-Muslim press about Islam, you know, of course evokes a very high level of response from Muslims. So that's why we have to be careful. Malaysia is a multiracial country, multi-religious country, and also is sitting as a country that is influential in world affairs. Why? Because when it comes to terrorism, the Western countries look for Malaysia as a moderate Islamic country to help them to handle the terrorism issues in the world. So there's a very high responsibility that Malaysia has with its place in the world and with the explosive ethnic and religious mix of people in the country. We could be affected by irresponsible media reporting.
So in a situation like that, I mean, where does the government fall? I mean, does it protect the principle of a free press? I mean, it could censure and maybe advise the media for you know, to be a little more sensitive, but, you know, or should it in fact be on the side of those who are unhappy and feel offended? Is there a tug between these two demands?
Yes. A lot of the demonstrators against Nanyang were demanding that Nanyang be suspended. But my minister, Dato' Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, he did not make that decision, because at the end of the day, you know, a suspension can actually cause the newspaper to be affected financially. There are lots of people who depend on media for their living. So, you know, we look at taking action which regulates or smoothens out situations instead of being hard-handed and delivering punishment. So that's the way how we handle media, print media especially in the country.
The old toolbox for government, of course, included some very blunt tools like censorship. And I know you've taken a very strong stand on censorship. In fact, you spoke to us last April on censorship, and we have a clip of you there speaking about censorship.
For Malaysia to be a developed country, we need its people to have an open mind and also a very evolving mind. Now, films play a big role in shaping the thinking of people in the country. So therefore, instead of telling people what they can watch, we basically should be telling them, here's what you can watch. Here's what's out there. This is considered excessive, this is considered mild, and this is considered for general viewership. But for us to tell people, no, you cannot watch this, you cannot watch that, I think that's a wrong action to take.
That was you speaking to us about a year ago in April. I wonder if your position is, in fact, a bit ahead of the field. A lot of people would not concede that citizens should be treated as adults. So there's a lot of very paternalistic attitudes out there coming from both state and also non-state actors. They want to be able to regulate other people's desires and choices. Where are you in the pack? I mean, do you feel you are in a lonely place when you make that kind of assertion?
You have to throw that clip back in my face, right?
But
the point is that it's an honest opinion that I expressed, because at the end of the day, our country is open. If we wanted to restrict people's thinking, we can restrict internet access to them. But we don't. In fact, we make the internet faster. For them to get information faster and even download videos and all sorts of things. So the influences from outside the country is so big that it's impossible for us to be heavy-handed about controlling what people think about. Beauty and the Beast, I had embarrassment in Parliament by, you know, making a statement that, you know, because it was government policy. I'm in government now. I have to defend government policy. The Film Censorship Board allowed the screening of Beauty and the Beast with a rating of PG-13, but with a few cuts. But we also have the check and balance mechanism in terms of film censorship, where we have the Film Appeals Board, which met on the same day I made a statement in Parliament, which then overruled the censorship board and said the film can be broadcast or played in for the public without any cuts. So you see, this is where the challenge lies. You know, I may have a personal opinion like that, but I'm still tied down to government policy. But at the end of the day, government policy also shouldn't tie down what people should be thinking and should be doing about. But the only thing is they have to be responsible.
Okay, you know, I think a lot of liberals and progressives in the country will side you on the Beauty and Beast issue. Where they might actually be with government in using heavy-handed tactics is against terrorists and those who threaten national security. But sometimes the media still needs to ask critical questions about this, and we've seen arrest after arrest of mostly young people who've joined or influenced by terror groups from abroad. How do we find that balance again between the transparency that's needed to make sure that no innocent person is caught up in these dragnets against, you know, the real demands for security?
Okay. Do the terrorists propagate their news through print media? They don't, right? So they use the internet. They use Facebook. They use social media. And the young people use social media a lot. So they can be influenced by this kind of material. So what we need today to do is to make sure that they are responsible in how they view their in their internet habits and do not get involved or be influenced by terrorism activities. Daesh uses the internet to recruit people. So, but how do we do it? You know, how do we prevent people from going into terror? So we have the laws like POTA, Prevention of Terrorism Act, we have SOSMA, and then we have the penal code that we can use to do that. But the problem, but the issue is always about find. You don't take action, and then you know something bad happens, and then we get the blame. But if we take action by detaining people, there are processes to go through. If they are truly terrorists, then they will be detained. If they're not, then they'll be let go.
So, is it that really a question of the messages coming in or the question of conditions that make young people receptive to these messages? Where should we be focusing? Filtering those messages or really looking at the conditions that create somebody who's vulnerable, who's open to this kind of influence, who sees violence as a real solution for their own personal problems?
You see, what I'm afraid of and what the government is afraid of is that terrorism is being linked to Islam. Islamic terrorism, which is unfair. And if you look at the West, today in the UK, they are introducing the Investigatory Powers Act, which is about controlling terrorism content online, where, you know, they have more draconian powers. I mean, you could say it's similar to ours when it comes to detaining people who are involved in terrorist activities, you know. So, we in Malaysia, we treat terrorism not as a religious matter, but we treat it as a danger to the country.
Lastly, we have a couple of a minute left. Really, your message to Malaysians on World Press Freedom Day. What do you think we should be focused on?
Focus on taking responsibility for what you say and what you do, and how it impacts the country politically, socially, and economically, you know. So, and then always look for the future. Hope that that society will always be as dynamic and not authoritarian.
Thank you very much for joining us. We've been speaking to Dato' Noor Jazlan Mohamad, Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. It's World Press Freedom Day, a day when we celebrate the fundamental principles of the press and press freedom. I'm Sharad Kutin. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.